We're back. Welcome to Vendée Radio. I'm joined today by Michael, who also has gone by the name of Jonah of Nineveh. He writes from the blog Septima Bucina, the Seventh Horn. He is an attorney, a father. He possesses a theology degree, and he is particularly notable for observing the panorama of today's world, today's crises, with a supernatural logic. And I would like to offer Michael an opportunity to transmit his observations, his thoughts to as wide a audience as possible. And so we are going to discuss the theme of controlled demolition in a series of broadcasts. Michael, welcome to Vendée Radio.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. I'm honored to be here. It's funny, a little background on the Jonah of Nineveh thing. I came up with that handle mainly as a joke against myself, sort of a mockery. I had someone in my life that was sort of pushing me to do this sort of thing, and I couldn't figure out why anyone would want to listen to me. And she's accused me of not following God's call. Part of the reason I was resistant because the first step was to move on from that relationship, but she's great and doing well. But the handle of Jonah of Nineveh was sort of a joke. It stuck. I'm not a prophet. I don't believe I am one. But that's how that originated.
Well, you've certainly gained a following on Twitter and many people who consider your observations. It might be that you participate in the charism of the prophet. Certainly, I've been illumined by many of your observations. So,
thank you.
In order to begin to explore this idea of the controlled demolition that we see going on today, I think you wanted to begin by looking at the idea under the title of Divide, Conquer, and Herd. So perhaps we can begin with an outline of where you see the genesis of so much we observe today.
Absolutely. So when you asked me to kind of approach the controlled demolition thing, it's such a seemingly reasonable request, because when you're on a microblog like Twitter, you can just juxtapose things, retweet, and make comments. But what is there is a couple of years of context for people who have been communicating with you for a while. And so you don't need to recreate the foundation that got you to a point which now seems obvious to you and your friends. But it's not that obvious if you don't have that context. So the best way to approach it, I thought, was to kind of go back, not all the way to whatever people think the beginning is, because we'd be here for a month of Sundays, but a good starting point, I thought, and a significant event occurred in 2012-2013. And that was when the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act was signed. It was promoted by President Obama and passed through the Congress and the Senate, and he signed it. Now, what that is, excuse me, I get a drink of water. In 1948, the Smith-Mundt Act was written allowing the Congress and the United States government to employ propaganda methods abroad, but prohibiting them from propagandizing American citizens at home. If you're an American citizen who happened to be in Moscow while CNN was playing, you were sort of hit by friendly fire, so to speak. But they weren't allowed to propagandize us here. And they had state-run actual news stations, but those were sort of a decoy. The funding also funded reporters and secular sort of news stations. Now, in 2012, Obama began the push to what he called modernize that act. And that modernization act removed the prohibitions against propagandizing United States citizens on United States soil. And just for context, the year before this was enacted, our country spent $750 million propagandizing people elsewhere. Now, those numbers are no longer reported, at least not domestically. So we don't really know what they're spending here on us. But what we do know now is that it's perfectly legal for United States government propaganda to be disseminated through news media, through social media, which is explicitly mentioned, not only disseminated, but to have government actors disseminate the information, like Anderson Cooper, or perhaps even Tucker Carlson. I don't know. I'm not making an accusation, but it could be, it could not be. You don't know. There was a reporter, and I had his, hang on a second, his name. Well, there was a reporter that left MSNBC, and he, on his way out, he sent this tweet. And he said, one of the things that I found most surprising about this industry was how many of these people are government agents, in the news. Now, that is sort of a thought process that has been labeled a conspiracy theory over the years. For people who have followed the development of things like the Smith-Mundt Act, been labeled tinfoil hat operatives, stuff like that. Now that it's becoming splendidly obvious, it's important to kind of take a look at where that began, because we're going to go through some things that happened over the past 4 years that would not have been possible but for the Smith-Mundt Act. And unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about Trump. Not because I'm targeting him, but because the past 4 or 5 years provide the most rich examples of what is going on and how complete it is. And I can just continue if you'd like. But this, if you look at, so for those following along or interested in looking these things up, the Smith-Mundt Act of 2012, the 112th Congress, it came out as HR Bill 5736. And you can look at that up on congress.gov. It makes it perfectly legal to put a CIA agent at CNN or MSNBC or Fox. And that thought alone, I find, is not that unpalatable for people to accept now that we've gone through what we've been going through. But the next level of thinking can be a challenge, and that's this. People own those companies. So in order for this to happen, they have to consent to it. And if you start looking at who owns these companies and the conglomeration of the media, you start looking at the sort of pyramid of media, it gets a little bit daunting. Now, how much are these companies coordinating with government? Is there much of a difference between them anymore? And I think we see that with COVID, it didn't appear to be. With the Ukraine-Russia thing, I'm not sure there is. One of the first examples of this, and we will get to some of the reasons why they do things like this later when we talk about what I call the controlled demolition. There was a video that came out in, I think it was early 2018, where media representatives read a script that ended with the phrase, "This is extremely harmful to our democracy." Mm-hmm. Do you recall that? I can play it if you'd like.
Indeed. Yes, please. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if they'll be able to see it, but they should be able to hear it, or we could share a screen.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our...
Can you hear that through my speakers?
Yes, I can, yes.
Okay.
It should be Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about the
plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish the same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false news
has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish the same fake stories without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda control exactly what they need to say. And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
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 Okay, so you get the point. Now, that script was read, I forget whether it was a Saturday or a Sunday, and this video came out of some guy's basement by Monday or Tuesday and proceeded to get millions and millions of views. Now there's a couple of things going on there. One, did some random guy search out these 50 or so channels on YouTube and find this clip? I guess it's possible, and put together this well-produced video, 2 minute long video, or minute 36 seconds. And have it take off like that organically, or was it sort of part of the game, so to speak? I don't know. But the broader question is why do they do that? Do they really think we're that stupid that we wouldn't notice that they were reading the same script all over the country? And the answer is, of course not. They wanted us to pick up on it. Now, why would they do that? Aren't they comfortable coordinating and dominating what information that we receive? Well, if you look, harken back to the timeline, one of the things that really began picking up steam at this exact same time was the QAnon phenomenon. And Q's, one of his greatest weapons, is a brilliant, I mean, everything about Q was brilliant, unfortunately. One of his brilliant slogans or mantras was, these people are stupid. And what did that do? It convinced people who actually may not be very smart that they're smarter than the people who have been dominating the narrative, politics, finance, and the world for decades, and gave them the courage and the pride to kind of own the libs. And so this is sold as they accidentally exposed themselves, that they're coordinating, and you can't trust any information out there except for me. I'm Q, and I have Q source intelligence access. And, you know, think what you want about Q, and I have some strong opinions about Q. One thing is irrefutable. He was a government employee, and he had access to Trump. That was sort of the vetting process I and many other people went through before they would even give him the time of day. That much was pretty clear. What his goal was not at first. But, you know, he pushed the Trump messianic stuff, and he's the savior of mankind. And there's a whole white hat coup going on, attempting to install Trump as president. And so many of these things were counter narratives and layered to really cloud thinking on, well, if elections are rigged, how did Trump get in? And, you know, and we're going to go through that again in 2024, some sort of explanation for why he was able to win this time, if it's not biometric governmental digital ID, which I suspect will be the, you know, how we MAGA on. But that was coordinated, timed perfectly to give Q a huge shot in the arm, to give Trump a huge shot in the arm. And the phrase fake news is born. And it's such a good phrase. It's such a good and marketable phrase because it's true from regardless of your perspective. But the problem with it is they were his fake news. According to the Smith-Mundt Act, the is it the secretary? There is a government, I think it's the Secretary of State, is ultimately in charge of overseeing the propaganda and the machine that it runs. And they're all answerable to the president. They serve at the leisure of the president. The president can call off the dogs anytime he wants. And so what am I saying? I'm saying that all the hatred that you saw for President Trump was Smith-Mundt Act propaganda. It was reverse psychology. Not all of it, because nobody controls every aspect of humanity. There are people who are just kind of going along, not realizing that they're being played. And there's a lot of emotionalism involved. But when you're looking at the institutional messages, they were almost completely government propaganda. And propaganda that did nothing but increase Trump's popularity. Because why? Because conservatives are countercultural and they have bred this hatred of themselves and this distrust of themselves for years. And then just in case you weren't catching on, they did obvious stuff like that for the people in the back of the class that weren't really paying attention. Don't trust us. And so as the time during Trump's presidency progressed, they went from being shady and unable to be trusted to outright wacky and cartoonishly evil. Some of these people went nuts. And it's like they're all competing for some sort of slapstick Academy Award. You've got Kathy Griffin cutting off Trump's head and doing a skit with it. was it Al Pacino went on these rants? These people were buddies with him for years, 15 minutes ago. And so all of a sudden they hate him. And the sort of Q subtext, and I'm going to keep mentioning Q, not because I think that, he was kind of important, but because all of the information that began on 8chan and, you know, with government operative collaborators making this sort of meme warfare, trickled onto Facebook and Twitter and all these other things. And so you had this dominating the conservative talking points, and a lot of it originated with the Q and the QAnons. So it's significant. But the talking points on the Q message boards were that these people had demons, and because Trump was appointed by God, their demons couldn't handle him and they were losing their minds. And that's why they were acting so stupid. He's a serial adulterer, lifelong partial birth supporting, twice billionaire with Rothschild money, Manhattan socialite, who has for some reason been able to convince people that he's an outsider and a Christian, even though he refuses to even hint that he would repent. He flat out denies he's never repented because he's never done anything wrong. And I just take my little cookie and my wine and I feel cleansed. you know, that doesn't mean he's an evil man. And I'm not saying that. I now think that he is, but that all doesn't mean that he's a bad operator. My point is, he's also not some sort of saint that these demons are going to be reacting to, you know, hypothetically. So why would they do that? These are people that are extraordinarily sensitive to public perception. And there was another narrative that got set up as their attacks failed, because you would see them, and it happened with Pacino and Kathy Griffin and so many, and they called it the Trump effect, that once they attacked Trump and it failed, their lives fell apart and they were miserable. And so you see Kathy Griffin, she came out, she shaved her head, and she had this sort of dark, foreboding makeup on, and she had this schmuck and looked like she had no shape to her and like she was emaciated. And Pacino did the same thing, and there's countless examples. And we're talking about people who know, you know, they study what their color eyeshadow has on the mood of people viewing their movies and their shows. They're very in tune with how they're perceived in the public. So I it's just part of the game, I think. And
so that,
you know, I can't prove any of that, but it just seems pretty obvious. Keep going.
The point you just made there, it's a game. The commentator Joe Atwill remarked that the candidates in the 2016 election almost seem to have been chosen to excite as much hatred in the other side as possible.
Absolutely.
Clinton and all of the her background and many evil actions and her whole sort of school mom persona antagonizing conservatives, and then Trump's misogyny and bombast and various remarks antagonizing liberals, so that people would be invested in the two-party dialectic. That video clip you played about this is dangerous to our democracy, it's about keeping people within that cave, looking at the shadows on the wall, chained up, thinking that there is a reality to this theatrical production, so that when something like COVID comes along and there is bipartisan uniparty support for tyranny, people still labor under the delusion that they are in fact living in a democracy where there is choice, right, and not looking at the meta purpose of that dialectic, which is to keep them invested in this this materialist paradigm.
Yeah, and it's a trap. It's a thought trap, and you can see it. I was sort of excoriated last election for suggesting that people not participate in the federal elections. I was called a baby-eating Democrat. You know, and any vote that isn't for Trump is for the Democrats. Well, that's a trap. There's really no difference between the two. But we'll get into voting later. I'm getting ahead of myself. If I had any belief that elections were still real, I would say that they ran Hillary against Trump to ensure his victory, because the woman is absolutely horrid and hated. And I have an opinion on this massive, massive MK Ultra sort of psyop that the entire world is experiencing and has been experiencing the past several years. In my perspective, in my opinion, the real target is conservatives. Now that there's 30% of people that they're never going to convince, there's 30% of people that they might, and there's 30% of people that'll follow them blindly off a cliff. So the target is in the middle, and sort of reasonable, rational people. They lure them very cleverly. They're not going to be able to convince me of anything anymore. They used to, and I'm not their target, but you know, nice people who are maybe not are really plugged in, but hold the same values that we do, they are very vulnerable. People in my community who I care about quite a bit, I mean, my own sisters, they're falling for every, you know, piece of bait that they put in front of them, poor things. And it's exhausting. They're on a adrenal fatigue roller coaster. It's clever. There's so much. There's obviously we'll never be able to summarize all the tricks that they do, but some of the most important ones we probably could. And the next one will be adversity marketing, this thing. And it goes right along with this reverse psychology that they're doing with the media. Next you have, we've got to control the counter message as well. So let's get some people who sound like our target, who sound conservative, but maybe really aren't thinking all the way down the road or controlled, controlled opposition, or people who don't get all the way there to the issues that are actually, they're really trying to conceal. And that's the sort of alt media crowd, right? And we saw this cancel culture thing start to happen. And sometimes it's real, but let me start this out by explaining, if they don't want you to see something, you're not going to see it. You'll just get memory hold. They ignore what they want to go away. They attack what they want you to see. And so when you have a video be deleted off or banned from YouTube, so it'll get uploaded, whether it's, a COVID narrative or a Trump narrative, gets uploaded. There's so many examples, gets millions of views. And then YouTube suddenly becomes offended and, gives the channel a strike and bans the video. And then suddenly everybody gets a text at home. Share this. It's getting banned off of YouTube. And you go and you look on YouTube and 3,000 people have mirrored it or copied it and are uploading it. And they're all now getting millions of views of the same video. And it suddenly reproduced like a gremlin in a swimming pool. And that's really not cancel culture. That's reverse psychology. That's promotion. And they could make sure that video, once they know what it is, never gets uploaded on their platform again. They can identify the code and they can just keep you from publishing it. How I know? Try uploading the same video twice on your YouTube channel. YouTube knows when you're doing it. And it's not hard. It's not hard for them to do. So what are they doing now? They're promoting something. Alex Jones gets kicked off Twitter. All of a sudden, Alex Jones's content is shared 10 times more than it ever was on Twitter, including the link to his website. And he's making more money and his message is getting out. There's too many examples to list. So that is what I call adversity marketing. They did it to Q. And all of the QAnons claimed that they were being shadow banned and suppressed and this and that. And if you look before they cleaned house, which they wanted to get rid of all those messages before the next election, because people are Looney Tunes, or at least some of them are. but Twitter did eventually sort of clean house. But before that, all while they're supposedly getting shadow banned, these accounts had hundreds of thousands of followers, some of them, most of them over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50. That's not being canceled. That's being promoted. And at times a tweet will get suppressed or banned, and that just fuels the fire. Look at, I'm over the target. Okay. Really, is it really getting banned if you can screenshot the tweet and then retweet it? The whole "these people are stupid" mantra made QAnons stupid. And it made them stop thinking, because they thought that everything they were doing was just reaching for low-hanging fruit, when in reality they were being manipulated really brilliantly, frankly. But it's not complicated. It's just reverse psychology. And so what happened? What happened was you had these conservatives and Republicans who, after two Bushes, Clinton and Obama, were browbeaten. People who who are desperately sort of holding on to conservative values and the fact that they're pro-life and, you know, and in social circles, sort of feeling apologetic about that, because it was okay to vilify conservatives. It was okay to vilify Republicans. And even Republicans thought it was okay. Well, yeah, thank you, sir. May I have another? You know, I have Democrat friends. I have liberal friends. I have homosexual friends. There's all these, this sort of hedging that people did to try to justify their existence as a conservative. Please like me still, even though I'm a conservative. They were browbeaten. And I'm not saying everybody was like that, but you all know somebody like that. And then along comes Trump, and he's sort of outrageous and bombastic. And he's suddenly saying the things that we wish the Bushes said and making promises that we've just wondered why nobody would ever do it. And suddenly he's saying he's going to do it. I'm going to defund Planned Parenthood and, you know, end abortion, get conservative justices in. And in tandem, you have QAnon on the message boards really sort of scandalizing people with horrific crimes against children that Democrats do. And well, both parties do it. Maybe Democrats do it more, probably. But that was the emotional bait. And this is all very MK Ultra, by the way. And especially when you start getting into imagery or descriptions of horrific practices. And so you're getting a tandem emboldening and then an outrage. And they're the outrage. Pardon?
And traumatizing as well.
Absolutely.
Making people feel very despairing so that there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, or what can we do about it? And, you know, the trauma-based mind control, especially when you're dealing with a somebody who wants to be masculine, somebody who wants to be a man that does something meaningful, and then traumatizing them in that way and convincing them that how they exercise their need to be masculine and you know, virtuous is to make memes and keep stay on this message board and sit back and let Trump handle it, because he's going to handle it. Don't worry. And I'm not being sarcastic. That was the message. You know, so it was setting up for what we saw next. Now, I wasn't following how they were firing up the liberals on the other hand, as much during this time. I was watching with fascination how they were turning a sort of mousy yet stalwart people into aggressive, openly in your face, not apologetic conservatives back when Trump was still pretending to be conservative in 2018, 17. And they slowly started bringing it to a head, you know, with the whole, so you got to save the babies, jail the pedos. And they have, they had liberals, and I'm convinced of this, especially with the media, because it's rooted in the Smith-Mundt Act, intentionally acting stupid and saying stupid things on Twitter that are just so easy to own. And you know, this pride that built as a result amongst these people was absolutely blinding. And you could just watch it happen. And there's a reason it's a deadly sin. It is very, very blinding. And they needed that to happen, I think. And now, I think the natural inclination to hearing something that I just said, like what I just said, is to respond saying, well, these people aren't thinking in religious terms. You know, these are secular people. Well, that's not true. MK Ultra Incorporated, MK Ultra was extraordinarily in tune with the damage of sin. It was run by a Satanist, and he, what's his name? Colonel's, I don't remember.
Michael Aquino.
The weird eyebrows, I think
Michael
it was
Aquino, was it?
Yeah, that's him. Guy that was complaining about being discriminated against in the military because he was a Satanist. Mm-hmm. Well, he
good
ran
friend
into
of Oliver North.
Yeah, isn't that right, interesting?
Yeah, right wing of the deep state.
Right. Yeah, two wings of the same bird. But they incorporated so much atrocity into these MK Ultra programs, and a lot of it was killing the soul. To get the soul pliable to receive the message we wanted to receive or to do what we wanted to do. And MK Ultra wasn't really for some sort of, you know, Jason Bourne kind of operative. Now, maybe they use it in that way. But all that 50, 60 years of study, the purpose of it is we're seeing it right now. And we're seeing it. Why do you think they had the COVID ticker numbers running all day long on the news for you? That is trauma-based mind control. I'm sorry, it is. And this nonsense about morgues being filled and plague ships, empty plague ships off the coast of New York and San Francisco, ordered by Trump. That's all trauma-based mind control. But it didn't begin there. You've been seeing it all along. And on the Q message boards, everything from posting images of farm injuries to things even worse. I had to write a code to block the images because the images were interfering with my ability to access the Holy Ghost, because I had to guard myself as a Catholic there trying to help some of these people. I could not look at what they were looking at, and they were looking at it all day, every day. That's MK Ultra. And it's intentionally spiritual. So when I say something like that and you say, well, these are secular, well, maybe the ones you know are, but this originates with a very spiritual integration intentionally. That's my response to that. Pardon?
That was very eloquent, Michael. There's so much to pick up on there, but I'll just take one, if I may, which is these techniques, these trauma-based mind control techniques. My friend, Dr. Jesse Russell, remarked on the use of hypnosis by so many of these media outlets, these commentators, these public figures with occult origins, as you've identified. And you just look at the way Stannon looks in the camera, looks at the audience, the repetition of these platitudes. You had one there interacting with your average, you know, the term, but normie of either shade today. And it's this parroting of those little sound bites which have been fed via these techniques, the weaponization of these techniques of information warfare.
Yeah. And there was a book, there's more now that are sort of critical. But there was a book, I know it was before 2017, because that's when someone gave it to me, that was praising Trump for his ability to integrate so many of these hypnotic techniques into his speaking, and that saying that that's why he's such an effective speaker. You know, someone might say, well, that's just a good speaker. And maybe that part of that stuff intuitively kind of gets incorporated into a good speaker's routine. Maybe I'm doing some and don't know it. I don't know. But just affirming what you said, I tend to think that things are more intentional at that level, but I don't know. But it is very hypnotic, and it is. And you see, you know, there are also studies that kind of study the brain when we're sleeping, or when we're compared to when we're reading or being active, or when we're watching TV or playing a video game, looking at a screen. And it's this kind of quasi hypnotic state, right, where you're more suggestible. And so when you trap people at home for a couple of years and all they have to do is stare at the screen, I mean, people are damaged. And I don't mean to say that it's irreversible, but we've all experience some sort of deleterious psychological effects from this. I intentionally don't watch anything unless it's a short clip that someone's telling me that I gotta watch. But
yeah, it's extremely agitating for the soul. The very medium of social media and 24-hour news cycles.
Oh, well, I got kicked off of Twitter, and it was a hard ban. And I as you know, I just noticed that this I have a child's iPad here that I just kind of thought I'd try again. And so I have a very private account now on Twitter that will stay private just for my friends. But I'm on there for 2 minutes and my blood pressure is going up. Mm-hmm. That platform is designed to agitate. Mm-hmm. And it's good in some ways, but it's got to be taken in small doses.
Yeah, there is a conspiracy against prayer in the modern world. And if your soul is constantly agitated by these salacious, shocking, emotive, sentimental, untrue pieces of information, it is going to be less likely that your soul cries out, Abba, Father, and turns the ear of its heart towards Almighty God. And that's the first step of any kind of Catholic restoration. It will begin in the soul. By their fruits you shall know them. That's the eternal test that our Lord gave us. And another thing Atwill said was that Facebook was created to lock us down. That there is a meta purpose here. There is an orchestration. And what are they both pushing? They're both pushing for different reasons, a biometric ID for the right wing of the deep state as a form of election integrity, and for the left wing of the deep state for a much more obvious biosecurity state. It wasn't that the so-called vaccine was for the virus, but the virus was for the vaccine, which is for the digital ID. That's maybe a topic we can come on to, but just thought I'd...
Yeah, well, I'm sure we will. But, you know, and maybe he mentioned this, but what he said about Facebook is verifiable. It was Operation LifeLog by DARPA. And it was a bit controversial when they rolled it out that the goal was to see if they could get people to publicly document all their behavior throughout the day voluntarily. And there was some pushback and kind of what a horrible thing to get people to do, you know, sort of, okay, but they got it done and it didn't last long, but it was wildly successful and they canceled it in Congress the exact same day that Facebook was incorporated. So Facebook is Operation LifeLog. And, you know, people are saying things that they shouldn't say in public on all of these platforms. But to your point about prayer, because frankly, all this stuff is important, but it's really not that important to me compared to the prayer aspect. But you're absolutely right. When you came to know me, under the Jonah of Nineveh handle, prior to that, I had canceled all social media for, I think, 5 months until the Amazon incident, and spent all day, you know, trying in unit of prayer. I mean, I was in adoration for hours and hours every day. This is not to brag or, you know, whatever. My point is this. When I got onto social media, logistically, that was impossible, but also practically, it became less and less. And when I started to see that I was encouraging people to pray more often than I was praying, I had to take a break. And that is the most innocent version of the harmful effects of getting on this stuff for too much. But there's worse. And it is intentional. It's this outrage media, this scandalizing people. And, you know, I always sort of cringe when I begin to talk about something like this, because I remember in the 80s and the 90s when some priest scandals, for example, would come to the fore. And I was told by my family, you know, talk about it because that scandalizes the people. Scandalizes the faith. And there's some merit to that depending on the circumstance. We're not in normal circumstances, but there's still some merit to it. So, but I kind of cringe because that's the gut response for a lot, especially Catholics. Well, what if I want to be outraged? You know, we should be outraged. There's such a thing as righteous anger. Yeah, well, if you have a balanced soul and if it's a little bit more than righteous, if it's a little too far, guess what? It becomes sinful. And you have a situation where you're stoking your own pride by justifying your anger and calling it righteous. And before you know it, you begin to hate. And so these people don't care if you agree with them. They don't care at all. If they can get you to hate or to feel despair, they win. And then that's the long and short of it.
Or stop you praying. Simple as that. And yeah, the very, as you say, the very medium itself attenuates, diminishes attentiveness, which is necessary for prayer.
And unitive prayer, forget about it. You can't do it. You can't do it while you're on social media. I've tried and, you know, it's work. Okay, Lord, should I say this? Really? You know, I mean, it's difficult. So, you know, if there are saints in the world today, I guarantee you they're not spending more than a few minutes a day on social media.
Yeah,
I shouldn't give it a benchmark, but a limited amount of time anyway, right? So should we continue?
Yes, please.
Or did you have some more? I thought you had a few things that you wanted to mention.
Well, really just to pick up on a couple of very erudite observations you made, the fact that the mainstream media's monopoly on information dissemination has been noticed more and more by people. And so there is an attempt to subvert, to manipulate the alternative media as well. The point you made about the links to intelligence agencies, a lot of good research has been done on this fact, the link of Anderson Cooper to the CIA, the background of someone like Tucker Carlson is quite interesting.
He's a total blue blood, but everybody is, you know, so many baits and switches, you know. I like him. The problem is that so we're going to talk about tribalism, but they get you to like these people very much because they're like a bull. And, you know, maybe you would be friends with some of them, but they're going to lie to you. You know, that's their job. There's a coin that the government, there's a phrase that the government coined called limited hangout.
Mm.
And it was, I forget which president, a situation where, I think you're right.
Watergate scandal, yeah.
Yes, it was. That's right. And it was going to become public. And the question was, how do we control that? Well, we can expose, you know, I'm being random here, 90% of the scandalous information and withhold the 10% that's truly damning sort of thing. And if you follow the Watergate scandal, you can imagine what that 10% is. There's all kinds of theories. One of them is pretty bad, but I don't know. But that's the gist. Q is a limited hangout. It's a perfect limited hangout. The other example of a perfect limited hangout that was extraordinarily effective was WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is a classic limited hangout. And the information that they release, and I'm not saying this is not true, by the way, folks, it may be true. The information they release may actually be factual information, or it may not. But the point is, they intentionally release this really scandalous and juicy information, you know, about Hillary Clinton, about this, you know, about the pedophilia, about all this stuff. And Q had a heyday with that. I mean, people were spending hours and hours and hours. People are still searching WikiLeaks. And what they don't realize, or they don't ask the question, what's not there? This is supposedly a data dump into a Democratic aide's thumb drive for which he got murdered, but somehow got it to Julian Assange, right? Not curated, supposedly. It's a data dump. Okay. What's not there? There's nothing about Israel there. There's nothing about COVID there. There's nothing about Trump there. There's nothing about vaccinations there. There's nothing about anything that's really, really destroying us right now there. Things that people will admit if you approach them separately, that this is a coordinated government psyop. Okay, if it's a coordinated government psyop and it's global, don't you think they've been planning it for more than a couple of years? Why isn't that in the WikiLeaks dump? You can tell it's a psyop. It's a limited hangout. And it was very well curated and cultivated. And the outrage about it was great. It gave the adversity marketing that I've been talking about. Even Julian Assange. I don't mean to laugh because I honestly don't know what's happening to that man. I suspect he's on a beach with a couple of other people that, you know, somewhere, but I don't know. I mean, maybe he is being victimized. They're not against throwing their own under the bus. They're not. And they can do that because they always have a worse consequence in store if the person, you know, tries to talk. It's not hard to imagine that these politicians who you thought were going to protect your rights might have gotten an email of their kids at a bus stop, you know, before the COVID scandal. It doesn't take that much to get a good man to shut up if he has children.
Yeah, a metaphor that, again, Dr. Russell used was that of the safety valve, that there is a one-way conveyor belt to the Antichrist system, and to pacify and subdue people into accepting that, occasionally there has to be a pressure valve release through the various, you know, give the examples that you've given, so
like a truck rally,
that it can just continue in that sort of inexorable direction.
And it's intentionally designed to be a little bit difficult to find some of this information so that you feel like you own it when you do, like you've found something. And there is an overarching theme on all of this that I don't know that we'll be able to touch on with justice and do it justice, but throughout all of this, they're training people to be Gnostic in various different ways. I mean, you've got people are trusting and they know damn well they shouldn't trust them. This is the real basic from why, because I can feel that he's good and, you know, the Holy Spirit is guiding me, or, you know, with information being true or false or what, so much of it is based on. These people will literally say the Holy Ghost is telling them what's true and what's false. It's not grounded in fact or sound thinking. And as soon as you remove the ability to for a person to follow the consequences of facts and the chain of events, a logical conclusion or result, as soon as that goes out the window, anything can be anything. And the opposite is true too. If you have people saying such and such can't be true because this would be the end result, these governments can't all be working together. Otherwise, we would already have a one world government, and that can't happen. I haven't seen any logos. Well, they're all working together. You'll admit that. You know, most people admit that, and they don't follow through with the results of what that means. You know, every single government on the planet, including supposedly our fake enemies, participating in a coordinated psyop to inflict tyranny, psychological torture, kill their own citizens by proxy in the hospitals, locking them down, putting them on house arrest and contriving food shortages, and then telling them they can't buy seats. I mean, it could go on and on and on. The marketing programs that came out from the United States were the same that came out in China, in Russia, in Iran, in North Korea, all of our fake enemies on schedule.
Yep.
That doesn't happen organically. And you don't have that without having a government that each branch of is accountable to someone somewhere. So that is the sort of thing I said that I just sort of jumping ahead, but I use that as an example. That's something that's so big that people can't accept it. So the result is they can't see that these governments are working together, because that would mean what I just said. And that's too big. That's too big for their head to get around or for them to accept. That's a lot of people anyway.
Every single institution above a certain size has been captured by the revolution. Corporations, the human element of the church, the courts, hospitals, medical facilities, education, universities, obviously political establishments. There is nowhere that has not been co-opted.
No, and what you said is a very big thing. And so it's true. And you can document it and track it, and you can discuss its origins, and you can discuss the origins of the origins if you're really not worried about getting deleted. But the fact is that it's true. I don't have a problem accepting that anymore. What I have a problem with is people who do accept that, at least vocally, but then do not think it through. Because they'll say something like that one minute, and then they're falling for the next charismatic idiot on YouTube or Twitter that has some sort of rebellious theme or hopeful theme. I mean, my goodness, someone sent me this mock Nuremberg trial in Europe. These people it's just a bunch of citizens. They set up a whole room like a play, and they were pretending they were having a Nuremberg. They call it the People's Court. And they were operating under common law principles, right? Because they don't understand how anything works. And that video made the rounds. People actually thought this was something. No, it was a show. It was a play. And the people in it were saying wonderful things, but it wasn't meaningful. It had no traction. It wasn't going to do anything. And you're never going to get the mafia to prosecute the mafia. It's just not going to happen. The Supreme Court has been captured by Freemasonry, and this is documented for decades and decades. Now, I don't know how many are Freemasons now, but we had, religious liberty kind of stuff. There was 8 out of 9 justices were Freemasons. The presidents who appointed them, Freemasons. This is one of those hot button terms that you have. You run a risk when you say the word Freemason. People that are sort of low information conspiracy theorists want to write you off. They're just old men in a lodge, or not everything is caused by the Freemasons. Not everything is caused by any particular group, unless you are talking about Satan. But to dismiss the Freemasons as the middle management of the New World Order is folly, because that's exactly what they are. And they have binding oaths. So when you get involved in that, you got to, one of the mantras that they give you in both in my graduate business program and in law school, and it's just false, is that conspiracies break up. The more people that are involved in a conspiracy, the quicker it falls apart. That's demonstrably false. Otherwise, there would be no military secrets. Otherwise, Freemasonry wouldn't exist. There's so many things that we know that's just false. Now, if you're talking about, and the fact that we have conspiracy to commit as a add-on crime in every state in the country, shows that it's demonstrably false. I mean, you've got, it's a crime, you know, to a conspiracy to commit murder, to fraud, all, you know, whatever crime you can think of. If you conspire to do it with somebody else, that's a conspiracy to commit. So to say that all conspiracies fall apart literally denies reality. And it's an interesting thing that somehow, you know, I've heard and I think I've read that the CIA coined the term conspiracy theory as a weapon. And it makes sense to me because the notion that conspiracies don't exist is really weird. It causes an insane type of thinking. So if it can't be a conspiracy, what's going on here? And so it's kind of like, there's a thing that happens with the brain when you take one decision factor away from an analysis. You know, the sort of opposite example from what I'm trying to say is when you're dealing with someone who has suicidal ideation, one of the ways to get them past that is to get them to tell themselves to remove suicide as one of the options on how to respond to this crisis. You can whine and hate yourself and life and everything all day, but don't let your brain go there. You just remove it as an option. And it takes effort and time. But once that decision point, that possibility is removed from their thinking, their brain opens up and other possibilities that they never could think of begin to blossom, and they never could think of them because that one was in the way. So if you put conspiracies don't happen or conspiracy theories are for tinfoil hat people in the way of thinking, it just shuts it down. It shuts it down. Everything's possible in this, well, not everything, but it's possible. And not everything is conspiracy. But massive conspiracies exist. How can you explain the past 2 years? It is what it is. This is actually getting easier, you know, to explain some of this stuff because they've demonstrated it. And so I looked on while we're on break, and I think we're doing pretty good on time. I have a couple more things I want to talk about. And then I'd like to end with a little brief conversation about the Weimar Republic. So is it okay if I keep going?
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely. So we were talking about, you know, I think we ended with, emboldening both sides, but from my perspective, the target is conservative leaning people, emboldening them, sort of, instilling or promoting, a sense of pride. You know, one of the things that, human beings, I don't know if it's a need. I think it is, but I'm not a psychiatrist. But this sort of desire to belong. And everybody kind of wants to belong to something, to somebody, to some group, to have some purpose. And that's a need that our faith fills, you and I as Catholics, that is filled by our faith and our church, especially when things are growing well. I think it's a need. And so when you give people who have been feeling ostracized by society this sense of belonging, that also is very powerful. And then a sense of purpose. Got to share this message, got to spread this message, got to fight for Trump, got to fight for the babies. And we'll see a few more things that they were encouraged to fight for. But that fight, that is, why are they doing this? Why is, you know, why the division? Why the adversity marketing? Why all this stuff? And we're about to get to it, and I'll show you why. And to simplify it and to be cute, it's divide and conquer. And ultimately, out of chaos comes order. But they emboldened people on both sides, and then they gave them plenty to argue about and sort of watched what happened. You know, before you know it, you've got Antifa riots, right? all over the country in Acme bricks that are waiting for them when they show up. You know, this guy dies, and, you know, police misconduct or not, I don't know. There's so many things about that. I'm not going to open up that can of worms. But within 72 hours, there were riots in, I can't recall, but I think it was like a dozen cities in the United States. And there were literally Acme bricks waiting for some of them when they got there. That's supposedly organic. These people have to get places, and the bricks have to get places, and all this stuff has to be coordinated and organized in advance. I'm not saying they knew an exact date that they were going to roll out, but they were ready to roll out and to multiple cities. And you've got people, you've got people exposing that some of these people are from outside the country, and President Trump pretending he can't do anything about it. And it's interesting because citizens are seeing that interstate crimes are being committed. You've got people coming from across state lines to commit crimes, to incite or participate in a riot. And some of them are not even United States citizens. That's all federal stuff. You can send in the FBI and shut it down in about 15 seconds. Right. But no, he didn't do it. He didn't want to do it.
They have addresses. They have bank accounts. They leave paper trails.
They bought flights.
No federal investigation whatsoever.
They use the instruments of interstate commerce, putting them into federal jurisdiction, meaning telephone calls, emails, banking, flights. It's all very, very easily federal jurisdiction. Now, I'm not a fan of federal jurisdiction. I'm not advocating for a big federal government. I'm just stating the fact. They refused to shut these down because they wanted them to happen. There's no way around it. And if that doesn't convince you, go onto YouTube and search active denial system. It's called, or ADS for short. We've had this technology for well over a decade. It's essentially 5G technology, and I'm not going to get into 5G conspiracy theories, but my point is it's a sonar wave that's attached to the top of a truck that pointed at a crowd of people, makes their skin feel extremely hot and burning, and they disperse. It's like throwing a bucket of water on a group of cats. They all run, or lights, whatever. You can't resist it. And it's not, they say, not harmful, or at least not fatal. And we have this technology. There was an LA prison, I think it still has it, the active denial system for prison riots. It breaks it up like that. Nobody needs to get hurt. You don't need riot gear. You just turn on the ADS. They have it. They didn't use it. They wanted the riots. You can see the level of absurdity in people in these events. If you didn't know that, the riots that occurred in Washington, D.C., President Trump turned off the lights in the White House and leaked a rumor that he was hiding in the bunker. Are you kidding me? I mean, the United States military and the Secret Service can't keep a crowd of Antifa away from the White House. Like, they did that to heighten the event, to dramatize it, to encourage it, to have it continue to be in the news cycle, because this sort of chaos, this sort of feeling of helplessness, you know, Trump wanting to stop this, or, you know, these people are horrible, our country is going to hell in a handbasket, whatever it is. It was going through everybody's mind. I was even frustrated. It happened in my town here, and I know better, but I wanted to go down there. You know, I mean, it's a natural kind of thing, but it wasn't organic. It didn't happen naturally. And I don't think very many things do anymore. And if they do, they get co-opted very quick. You've got a situation here. I mean, there's so many examples of this. People just don't connect the lines. Governor Whitner supposedly is victim of a kidnapping conspiracy in Michigan, which really boosted her popularity, by the way. And while you know, President Trump's in office and Whitmer's supposedly one of his big adversaries on the state level, she's a player. I don't know why, but she is. And so this conspiracy to kidnap and harm Governor Whitmer arises. And we're finding out that a large number of these conspiracists, if not a majority, I don't know the exact number, are FBI agents, you know, inciting these people to commit crimes. You know, it happens everywhere. We have documented examples of a government group called COINTELPRO infiltrating with the political organization that Obama sent the IRS against, libertarians. And they infiltrate, they poison, they put leaven in the bread, and they discredit, they divide, and they conquer. The Libertarian Party is not a viable party right now because of that. So then you have literally while all this is happening, governors or mayors defunding the police. Just in your face. No, not only are we not going to try to stop it, we're going to defund the police. So I don't know why. you know, they still have their security guards and all that. It's the in your face. They want you to hate them. They want you to see what's going on. They want you to acknowledge that they are the assigned villain for this part of the movie, and you're supposed to hate them. And we're not supposed to hate anybody, for one thing, but hopefully the fact that people are getting manipulated into feeling this way will give them some sort of armor against resisting these emotions that are natural, but they're being created unnaturally. And these aren't natural events. These are contrived. And the goal is that sort of range of emotion and reaction and scandal and outrage and ultimately chaos. you know, the next thing was the Kavanaugh thing. They sold this guy as a conservative, pro-life Catholic. You never heard him say Jesuit, but, you know, Kavanaugh, people really got mad at me for this one. And it's the same with Vigano and Trump and sort of all, people get upset. When they get a little hope in an individual, it feels like you're attacking them. If you inject some reality into that picture, you know, and to a certain extent, it's just almost not even worth attempting on some things, but I did with Kavanaugh because Kavanaugh is one of the swampiest swamp rats that are out there. The guy was in the Bush White House. I mean, he was involved in the Vince Foster murder investigation. He tanked that, you know, with Clinton and Vince Foster. You're not American, so maybe you're not aware of that, but that it was alleged that Clinton either, you know, had this guy, Vince Foster, murdered, and there was an investigation. He was involved in that, and that went nowhere. So then he's involved in the impeachment of Bill Clinton, which, looking at it with the eyes that I have now, I don't think was ever designed to go anywhere. He got prosecuted for lying about sex instead of sharing, you know, state secrets on the phone during sex. You know, it's just none of it makes any sense, but he is involved in taking that. He gets rewarded for that by getting a White House counsel position under George W. Bush. And we have 9/11, and lo and behold, within a couple of days of that, or for a very short time of that, the Patriot Act rolls out. I've seen thousands of pages. Come to find out that he was very involved in its drafting of the destruction of the Fourth and Fifth Amendments. He gets rewarded for that by a First Circuit seat, which is largely to be considered the feeder for the Supreme Court. Is in Washington, D.C., the First Circuit Appellate Court. And they get really interesting and influential cases, which is why it's kind of a feeder for the Supreme Court. He proceeds to spend his tenure on the First Circuit, continuing to destroy the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. This is a guy who, there was somebody who called Florida It was about an art deal. And the people in Florida with whom he was speaking, I think they were speaking French. The government wiretapped him, listened in on his conversation without having any probable cause and a warrant to do so. And they ended up not prosecuting him. And Kavanaugh said, well, no harm, no foul. And they thought, you know, he was speaking French, so it could have been an international terrorist thing. And no harm, no foul is not the standard. You know, it's, did they violate the Constitution by tapping a citizen's wire, invading their privacy without due process, or exigent circumstance, you know, whatever the standard may be for the particular scenario. And they completely violated his rights. And Kavanaugh didn't find that to be troublesome. In fact, all the Fourth and Fifth Amendment stuff, he was hired at Supreme Court to continue to destroy the Fourth and Fifth Amendment and the continuing militarization of the United States and the federal government. And he was painted as this pro-life Catholic who was being persecuted by the Democrats because Roe v. Wade was at risk. And he's just not. I mean, the guy's admitted in the past he would never overturn Roe because of stare decisis, because of precedent, which is the most absurd thing that a potential Supreme Court justice could say. If precedence was binding always, we'd still have slavery in this country. It makes no sense, but they had this was in some regards sort of the pinnacle of the idiocy and the chaos, at least with regard to some of the politicians, that the over the top hatred and nonsense and over something that supposedly occurred 30 years ago, with this woman who just so happens to house CIA interns in her house, has two front doors and is talking like a baby in front of the Congress, saying that, oh, he tumbled on the bed with me when we were children. And I'm not saying that it's okay to violate people's boundaries, but I am saying he didn't commit a crime. And there was nobody who thought he did. And so they took something intentionally, sort of people were kind of not sure they should be angry about, and they made a huge deal over it. And then during the hearings, they put Alyssa Milano right front and center with her cleavage and distracting. And it was a big show. You know what they did during that while all the senators were pretending to hate each other?
A slip through FASB 56.
Yeah, and maybe we're saying the same thing, a black budget with a unanimous bipartisan Congress, Senate, and Trump signed it. Nobody said a word, you know, about this thing. And I wonder what that was funding. Have you read it?
Yeah. So Catherine Austin Fitz mentioned this. FASB 56, Federal Account Standards Advisory Board Statement 56, Trump approved, authorizes the government's use of secret accounting books on a permanent basis so that the U.S. Treasury can be looted endlessly to finance black budgets projects for perpetuity.
Yeah, that's the man of the people right there. Let me slip in the right to perpetually keep what we spend your money on secret from you, which is probably why you don't see any Smith-Mundt Act funding numbers after, you know, a certain time. And, you know, what were they funding? COVID was just right around the corner. So anyway, all that comes to a head after they sufficiently distracted, got people at riled up at each other. Suddenly they were done with whatever their goals were. And Susan Collins comes out and says, hey, everybody relax. He told me he's not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And then they had a vote that day and he gets pushed through. Suddenly, boom. And then what happened? You know, then this other one that's supposed to be Catholic, this lady who seems very likable, she's replacing the high abortion witch, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who thought the age of consent should be lowered to, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was not a good person, and she was a stalwart protector of abortion. And supposedly this pro-life Catholic mother slipped, and she's not even an Ivy Leaguer, which is extremely unusual, slips in under the radar without so much as a fight in the smoothest confirmation hearing in my history as watching these things. I'm sure they all went smoother 100 years ago, but there's always a fight lately. She didn't get one. And nobody was wondering about that. Well, come to find out that her opinions strongly support mandatory vaccination and lockdowns right before COVID. They give
and
you
all the
heroes.
Catholics fell for her again, fell for it again.
Whole, oh, yeah. And would become so offended if you had questioned this Catholic mother. You know, if you need a hero, they're going to give you one, and it's not going to be what you want. So all that kind of leads me to, I think what is a perfect example, and it's an important one, and it's probably going to blow some people away. It's important, and it's early on in the Trump presidency. And this is an example of Smith Mundt coming into play, divide and conquer coming into play, the stoking anger, and both wings of the bird working in unison together, faking their animosity. And that is the issue of the wall. You remember the wall early on in Trump's presidency? It was a mantra, man. We need that wall. We got to have a wall. And, you know, we got to stop these people from coming across the border, this wall. And you'd have these caravans, these Soros-funded caravans, conveniently slow rolling all the way up the South America with new shoes and iPhones and 3,000 of them. And everybody was focused on those things. And these enemies of Trump doing his awful stuff while actually boosting his ratings exponentially. And nobody's pointing out that 3,800 people a day are walking across the border under this guy. No, focus on South America, the slow rolling caravan. And, we had kids in cages fights. We had all this division. People were literally yelling at each other over this wall. This wall. Trump shut down the government over funding over the wall, not defunding Planned Parenthood. In fact, that was when he still had control, I think. He definitely had control of Congress during two budgets, and he could have defunded legislatively. There's another way I'll mention in a minute, but not a word about it. It was all about the wall. I didn't get, funding for the wall. It was really kind of interesting during, the Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer at this time were sort of the arch villains and opposing the wall, and they would go and have meetings with him sometimes, and sometimes they would film it, and Trump would own the libs. One of these times they didn't film, and there was a camera. There's a sort of a back door of the White House area where sometimes they have news vans or catering trucks, and there's a screen of some trees that kind of blocks it. Doesn't give it perfect protection, but it sort of blocks it. Somebody was filming in that general direction. And when Pelosi and Chuck Schumer came out during this is during the height of this controversy, they came out and they turned and talked to each other and started laughing. And they both started dancing like this old people dance where they were celebrating something. And then they noticed the cameras and they stopped and they went out and they gave their response. They gave their statements to the press about how awful he is and all this stuff. Very weird. And, it's all stagecraft. But the wall, let's talk about the wall. The wall is impossible. You could never build the wall because 67% of the land on our southern border is privately owned. And yeah, for those of you paying attention, yeah, I just said that the government owns 33% of that's that magic number, but 67% is privately owned. And it's owned more often than not by big ranchers. And a lot of times they herd cattle from Mexico back to America, Mexico back to America. It's all their land. Building a wall in the middle of that would cause these people to have to decide whether that meat is imported or domestic. And it changes everything with regard to that business model with regard to food standards, with regard to taxation and the cost of the American public. It's complicated. And I'm pretty sure Obama tried it and failed, which is why he had some fence up. And most of Trump's wall was just turning Obama's fence into wall. But it was impossible. What has to happen in order for that, for a government to build a wall on your property, dividing your property, is they have to either convince you to sell it or sue you and take it. It's called the takings clause of the United States Constitution, otherwise known as eminent domain litigation. And in order to be successful in that sort of litigation, they have to convince the judge that there is a need, a necessary need that outweighs the private rights of the citizen on behalf of the government. And they have to prove that what they're offering to pay you is just. They have to pay what's called just compensation. And in that aspect of the litigation, experts get involved on both sides, and it's protracted litigation. And it's litigation that's very common litigation. Eminent domain litigation is in every federal court of this country, every day of the week. Everybody knows about it that goes through law school. And that includes most of the newscasters that you see. Most of them are lawyers, and certainly includes the Department of Justice, and absolutely includes any sort of building developer in this country, because they've had to either fight the government from taking their land or fight to develop what people call wetland. And Trump's a builder. He knows what eminent domain is about. You know, Nancy Pelosi, everybody in Congress knows about this. So they could have come out when he asked for funding in the wall. Nancy Pelosi could have just said what I said, say, you know, even if we wanted to help you, it's going to take a decade. Even if we, because Congress has got to be the entity that sues for this property, even if we went out and sued for each of these parcels in eminent domain litigation so that you could get your wall, it, you know, be 10 years from now before we have any sort of progress. They could have said that. The newscasters could have said that. Any sort of governmental lawyer could have said that. They all know it. Nobody mentioned it. I saw one person mention it, Judge Andrew Napolitano, and I'm not endorsing the man. He's just the only one I saw mention it. He got shut down and he never mentioned it again. So why is that? How could that be? That Smith-Mundt Act governing the narrative and both sides working together to divide the middle. That wall was never intended to divide the United States from Mexico. It was intended to divide the people of the United States. And Trump knew that. And, you know, most pro-life president ever, he shut down the government over that wall. He could have added at least Planned Parenthood funding in that controversy. As a matter of fact, even when he didn't have control over Congress, All he had to do was refuse to pay. The Congress makes the laws. The president enforces them. That includes, you know, technically money kind of runs through his office and funding some of these things. Anyway, he could have refused. And Congress would have had to take him to the Supreme Court, or he could have gone to the Supreme Court saying, I refuse. And I think you need to review whether or not it's constitutional to require taxpayers to fund baby murder. It's that simple. You just have to refuse. But he didn't do it, and he never wanted to. What we got instead was him coming out in this atrocious talk about how Planned Parenthood helps a lot of women, you know, breast cancer and whatnot. So anyway, that's kind of deviating. The point is, the wall is a really great example of this whole machine working together to divide the American people. And it worked really well. People were really upset about that. It's kind of hard to not see it once you know. Now, of course, you could not believe me, but yeah, in the event that I think someone is tempted to do that, I suggest that you just go onto Wikipedia and it's right there for you. And I can give a link at some point. There was a Roosevelt sort of land grab of border wall. And over the course of years, that government was sold to private people, you know, and it's 67% is privately owned. So the Constitution protects, it prohibits a wall being built without everything that I just said. And you can't be a constitutionalist without wanting the Constitution to be followed. That's all there is to it. Now, I think this is, we're going to run long here, but I want to kind of close with the Weimar Republic sort of thing. I think you know where I'm going, don't you? Everything that I've just described, it's a little familiar. And if you don't know history, you won't know that. And let me start by saying, am I saying that this is all coordinated to be a repeat of something that already happened in history? I don't know. But the fact you're going to have to make up your own mind on that. I have strong suspicions on that, but I don't think that you asked me on to give my suspicions of things that I can't prove or at least give some sort of probative information about. But that is the Weimar Republic. You know, for those of you who don't know who that is the government that was created, I think, after World War II in Germany.
World War One.
World War One. I'm sorry, in Germany, in between World Wars. It was a republic. Let me lay the groundwork for how that republic arose. We've got Germany losing the First World War. Interestingly, their media was telling them that they were winning up until the day that the world ended. A lot of German people were surprised that they lost. And German people, at least the ones I know, and historically are some pretty great people, some of them, and conservative, trending towards conservatism, at least when I was there. Again, this is just my experience, but I think there's some history to back it up. After World War I, and Germany got sort of humiliated, we had the harsh financial penalties of the Treaty of Versailles because, you know, let me just skip that. The loss was a shock to them. Their media told them they were going to win. They lost. And then suddenly they have these financial penalties. And then in 1928, the Wall Street crashes. And Germany was, I think they had they owned a lot of American debt. And so that hit their economy really hard, harder than a lot of other European economies. And so what happened, whether by coincidence or planning, this Weimar Republic sort of degraded into hedonism. And I don't mean hedonism like, you know, the roaring 20s that you see on, you know, black and white movies. I mean hedonism like similar to what we're seeing now. You had cross-dressing, stripping strippers. You had suddenly gay brothels sprouting up in areas where they're not accustomed to that. One of the big scandals was a law passed that allowed companies publicly to market contraception. And that was particularly scandalous to the German people. And they started having condom dispensaries all over the place and things really got bad. And there was a lack of men because a lot of men died in World War One. And so you had a female, I wouldn't say dominated, but very female oriented government, civil authorities. There was a lot of feminism involved well before its time. And again, a lot of those women are probably really good people. But the fact is that there was a very feminine switch and it was rather abrupt after the war. There was the feminism, the moral corruption, open homosexuality, he, she, burlesque shows, porn, drugs, alcoholism, and weakened police authority. They didn't have money to fund the police. And you had these situations where either due to lack of funding and training or by design, and I think there's probably both, but I don't know, high profile, wealthy criminals were getting off scot-free and they were parading it in front of the people and getting them outraged. And so you have this silent German majority who, where for I suppose a decade or so, are getting scandalized by this hedonistic, chaotic minority with immoral nonsense, corrupt police. You had police that wanted to do a good job were quitting because they couldn't. And ultimately there was this animosity between the public and the police because the average Joseph was thinking that the police was their enemy. When I suspect in reality, some of it was just hard when you don't have the proper training to arrest in a manner that will result in a prosecuted crime. It's so easy to get out of a legitimate crime if the arrest is bungled or if the evidence gathering is bungled. And I don't know what the rules of evidence are over there, but I suspect they have them. And so that's kind of what happened. Some of the police were bad operators. And I'm sure that's the tone that was being set. So, excuse me. With police lacking the power to do their job and some police being corrupt and all being publicized. So you got moral degradation, frustrated and outraged populace being dominated by depraved liberals, injustice being flaunted in their faces, and economic collapse. What did that give rise to? That gave rise to the German people demanding the iron fist. Hitler wasn't elected. He was appointed by popular demand because he wanted according, I'm not going to praise Hitler. So I have to be careful to use words that aren't going to be given that sort of interpretation. But his message was that he was going to drain the swamp, so to speak, and give the Germans a 1,000-year Reich. And it's very similar to what we're going through right here. So similar that one of Trump's Q, his message is that there'll be 1,000 years of peace once Trump is done. And it's interesting that you see that 1,000 years in a lot of contexts, and I'm sure there are light bulbs going off out there, both in legitimate scriptural contexts and in, I would say, the counter message to that, and with certain cults. And the QAnon is a cult. I'm sorry, but it is. If you have family members that are following that, intervene, because that's bad news. It's bad. And it may not seem bad to you, but if you see the origins of some of these things, some of the Gnosticism and the esoteric sort of New Age nonsense, I mean, Jesus is a progenitor angel. I mean, it gets really weird. It's very weird stuff. And it's all very Freemasonic. It is what it is. So that, I think, concludes what I had to say on the divide, the hurting sort of aspect of this. Do you have any questions? There's so much. I'm sorry if I missed. There's some important points that I've missed. And there is an overarching, believe it or not, what they want to do has been written down, and some of it's quite old. And it seems like they're following these playbooks really accurately. Some of them, you've got the Alta Vendita, you've got, there's some Freemasonic stuff. There's some Talmudic stuff. It's kind of creepy, and you don't want to rely on what enemies of God have written down. It's not like it's prophecy. It's like you don't really want to listen to what a demon says as he's being expelled. Demons don't prophesy. They don't have the ability to see the future. But they can make self-fulfilling prophecies. And that's what we're dealing with here, I think.
Michael, thank you for sharing your compelling analysis and for this first broadcast in this series on the controlled demolition that was Divide and Conquer and Herd. Michael, I look forward to our next conversation very imminently.
Me too. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.